morning, Texas Tech. I'm Josh Cook, and on today's show, we explore Black History Month.
And I'm Julie Fisher. Our guests today include Dr. Carlos Hill from the Texas Tech Department of History and former Red Raider and current Pittsburgh Steeler, Baron Batch.
Baron Batch just walked in the studio, just saw him. I'm Marissa Trevino, and happy 25th birthday, Rihanna. Along with Rihanna's birthday, today is also the world's International Day of Social Justice. And yes, that was not planned. And no.
Care the irony!
Good morning. I'm Kiara Powell with your KTXT News Update. A grand jury indicted a Lubbock man on murder charges Tuesday in connection with a fatal attack in the 3000 block of 35th Street last year. 35-year-old Joshua Paul Bowles is charged with the stabbing death of David Vincent Martinez, which happened back in November of last year. Bowles has been held in the Lubbock County Detention Center since his arrest. Bail is set at $1 million. Tuesday, the Senate Education Committee voted out a bill that would change graduation and curriculum standards for high school students. SB 3 would replace the current three-tier system with a single diploma. Students would earn a special endorsements to their diploma, including career training courses or advanced placement courses. Committee Chair Senator Dan Patrick said at a hearing on the bill last week that this will give students more options to tailor their high school education to their post-secondary goals. That bill now heads to the full Senate. Here's Cutter Martin with a look at our weather.
Good Wednesday morning. Lubbock so far a cool and damp start to the day, and these damp and cool conditions will likely continue through the afternoon with highs only approaching the upper 40s, maybe 50 degrees. Combine this with gusty southeasterly winds, it'll certainly feel like a late winter day out there. And as a cold front moves in from eastern New Mexico this evening, we could see some strong to severe thunderstorms develop west of the city of Lubbock and track into the city between 6 and 10 p.m. tonight. KTXT will be here to bring you full in-depth coverage of this developing weather situation, but for now, I'm Cutter Martin with your KTXT weather. Now back to Good Morning Texas Tech.
Welcome back, Red Raiders. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech. I'm Julie Fisher here with Josh Cook, Marissa Trevino, and Kiara Powell may be here in a little bit. Looks like she's scheduling some important matters.
Kiara always looks like she's doing something important. I wonder if she's just...
she's telling us to be quiet.
She's talking to her boyfriend.
Today is a very special episode of Good Morning Texas Tech. Today we are recognizing Black History Month. And she's joined us.
I had to confirm our interview, okay? He's trying to find a place to park. Give me a break, guys.
Oh, don't start that conversation about parking.
Not on this historic day. We're going to go. We're going to move on. As we all know, February is Black History Month, and we thought we would go ahead and do a show over it because of many, many, many reasons. But we went ahead and put together a montage of some of the biggest moments in Black history, and here we are.
I don't pretend to be an expert on communism or any other kind of politicalism, but you can put me down as being an expert on being a colored American. I know that life in these United States can be mighty tough for people who are a little different from the majority in their skin color or the way they worship their God or the way they spell their name.
I am certain by now that all of you know of the horrible crime which was committed last night between Selma and Montgomery, Alabama. Arrests were made a few minutes ago after the tragic death of Ms. Val Liuzzo on a lonely road between Selma and Montgomery, Alabama.
I still have a dream.
Yes.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day,
yes,
this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
I, Adam Powell, may belong to a group of people that some others may think are inferior, but I belong to a group of people that God, omniscient, omnipresent God, God of all power, says, you are my children, and you're the same as anyone else.
If, in short, he cannot enjoy the full and free life which all of us want, then who among us would be content to have the color of his skin changed and stand in his place? Who among us would then be content with the counsels of patience and delay?
Democrats have continued to convene once every 4 years and draft a party platform and nominate a presidential candidate. But there is something different about tonight. There is something special about tonight. What is different? What is special? I, Barbara Jordan, am a keynote speaker.
We, of course, are the crew of Spacelab J, STS-47, which, of course, was the 50th flight of the space shuttle. Our mission specialist number 4, Dr. Mae Jemison, making her first flight.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last! Hello, Chicago!
A very well put together speech montage. It's almost moving in some ways as well, because you listen to that, you think about the images, and granted, our generation did not grow up during this time period when this was all happening, but, you know, thanks to YouTube and everything and newsreels, we're able to look back and relive some of that, and, you know, from stories and everything as well, it's a moving and touching piece.
Something that I really enjoyed, because I didn't hear this before it played live, was that Obama was the closing thing, and that's really something that's awesome that our country has moved to, is having a black president is something that's a big deal. So I was glad that was included. I wasn't expecting it.
KP?
I love that package. Julie let me hear it yesterday, and I cried repeatedly like a big baby. But I just think it's really special. When we look back at history and you see how far we've come, and granted, there's still so far we have to go. There's no denying that. But it's something spectacular to see what people were willing to struggle and fight through because they knew it was right.
Mm-hmm. I agree. The reason I ended it with just those two words from Barack Obama was he's it's ended with a hello. I don't know.
it's a piece that, you know, I think when our children one day, when they're growing up, it's something that they're going to be so removed from that time period that all they're going to have is the videos and the sound bites. And I've personally talked to my parents about that time period and growing up in it, and it was an interesting time period. Of course, you know, where they grew up wasn't affected initially by it, but it was something that touched them and it touched America, and it continues to touch America today.
Well, I think that some of our parents were probably affected by it. I mean, I know that I'm probably disconnected from it. I didn't experience a lot of what was going on then, or even really know about it more than YouTube and video clips with what my kids will have. But my mom remembers when segregation was going on and when she had to be one of the first, like, 10 students to be into, like, an all-black high school, and how scary that was.
I moved to Midland from California. They had just finished busing not that long, a few years prior. So, and I didn't quite understand what that meant, because where I went to school, that wasn't an issue in California. But when we moved back to Texas, to kind of see that it really truly wasn't that long ago.
Well, and some of my very, very best friends are black. They're African American. And, you know, going places with them has really, really shown me that it's not, racism is not as dead as we'd like to believe. And to see to see the progress that we have made, even in the past 6 years, regardless of if you agree with Barack Obama's political ideas or anything, we're putting that aside because that doesn't matter right now. What matters is that this country was able to elect several leaders less than 100 years after we were brutally hanging people. And I just feel like we should be proud of that, of the progress that we've made. So I don't know. We still got a long way to go, but pat ourselves on the back. We'll be back.
Hey guys, this is Matt Smith, your new music director at KTXT. This week we will be adding OOO by Oberhofer. Don't Play With Guns by the Black Angels. Saw You First by The Givers. And Heavy Feet by Local Natives. Make sure to tell us what you want to hear on KTXT via Facebook or Twitter. Hashtag RaiderTunes. Thanks for listening.
Rose wouldn't have had to let go if she'd only listened to KTXT's winter weather alerts with up-to-date emergency weather conditions on the air, Twitter, and Facebook. KTXT Weather will never let you go.
The first annual Texas Tech Appathon is coming up February 22nd and 23rd, hosted by the College of Media and Communication and the Whitaker College of Engineering. The first annual Texas Tech Appathon will challenge students to create the perfect app for the popular on-campus game, Humans vs. Zombies. Visit ttuappathon.com to register now.
Welcome back, Red Raiders. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech. Let us know what you think at the Raider 881. I'm here with Josh Cook and our guest, Dr. Carlos Hill. He's from the Texas Department of History. Pull your microphone just a little bit closer. Texas Tech Department of Political History.
Absolutely.
Anyway, you've done quite a bit. I know your dissertation was on resisting lynching. So I think Kiara probably has a few questions for you. Kiara.
I just want to say I'm really excited to have you in studio. And I guess the main topic of this next piece is Black History Month still relevant? And we had a couple students go out, and we'll show you that package here in a minute. But I want to get your thoughts on why it's still relevant and if it is.
Yeah, so we went around. We had one of our students go ask just what people thought about Black History Month, how they felt like it applied to them, and here's some of the responses that we got.
What are your thoughts on Black History Month?
My thoughts on Black History Month? I think that maybe we shouldn't celebrate for a whole month.
Really?
I don't think there's White History Month, or there's not Mexican History Month. There's only Cinco de Mayo and 16 de Septiembre. That's only 2 days. Why do we have to celebrate a whole month? Just out of curiosity. But I think it's nice that we celebrate it. It's a good cause. I personally don't celebrate it. I don't go out and ride in the front of the bus just because it's Black History Month.
Do you think that it's still relevant in today's society?
Yes, it is very, it's very relevant. It's very relevant.
And then you hear a lot of the stuff like, well, how come there's not like a White History Month or something like that? But people don't realize like there are those history months. There's Irish Heritage Month. There's all these different heritage months. And I feel like Black History Month needs to be put a little bit more on campus, a more emphasis on campus.
What are your thoughts on Black History Month?
Well, I think the most moment, most important moment in the Black history which has happened in the United States is in Arkansas, Little Rock, where the first African-American person was allowed to go to high school in like a long time back. You know, it's all equal. So I celebrate every month with as Black History Month with my friends. I'm a petroleum engineering student, so everybody there is from Nigerian or somewhere, so yeah, they're all my colleagues.
What are your thoughts on Black History Month?
I think it's great, you know, to celebrate a whole month dedicated to Black History Month.
Do you think that is still relevant in today's society?
Yeah, definitely.
Is it important to you?
To me personally, no.
Do you guys think that Black History Month is still relevant in today's society?
I think it's still relevant. I think that, I mean, times have definitely changed to the point where we don't have as much racism or we don't have as much oppression as we did back in the times. But, I mean, it's still around, and I think it's still important because there's, like, plenty of hate crimes that still go on. So I think it's important that we still just kind of reiterate it as much as we can so that people can know that, you know.
I think his last comment is kind of the one that I tend to agree with the most out of all of those. There were some answers that we got either off the record or that were just so ridiculous. I didn't put them in the mix. So obviously we got some mixed reviews. Some people said, yeah, it doesn't apply to me, but I still think it's necessary. And then some people didn't see the reason for it. And other people said, yeah, it's extremely important. So is that the typical response you normally get?
I think you always get a mixed response, but the thing that people have to keep in mind always is that Black history is American history. Although the Black is emphasized, Black history is the history of slavery. It's the history of the Civil Rights Movement. This is all American history. And so to the extent that people say Black history isn't relevant, they're saying American history isn't relevant. And I agree, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, a month. It should be 365 days.
It's just like all other history.
Yeah, I celebrate Black History Month 365 days a year, but I'm a historian. I'm an African-American historian. This is my job. But yeah, it's as relevant as it was when it was initially conceived. You know, Carter G. Woodson, the great African-American historian, he developed African-American History Week in February 1926, and he chose the second week of February in order to honor Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, but also George Washington, presidents that he and his opinion played a tremendous role in African-American history. And so Carter G. Woodson, the great African-American historian, chose the second week. 1976, Congress decides that it should be more than a week. And in 1976, Congress passes an act, designating February Black History Month. And so in 2016, it'll be the 50th anniversary of African-American History Month. And so it's definitely relevant because it's a moment of reflection, but it's also a moment for truth telling. And as you were saying earlier, there has been progress, right? There's still a long way to go, right? And so a short, long answer, but it's definitely still relevant.
Does it surprise you that we sit here in 2013 and there's still responses like the ones we heard?
It's disturbing. I mean, one of the things that African American history is supposed to do, it's supposed to educate people, right? And it's supposed to enlighten them about the contributions that African Americans made. And so it's really disheartening when you hear those kinds of responses. Why can't it be just one day? It's really disheartening But at the same time, that shows that the necessity for having it, right? And so I would be lying to you if I said it didn't matter. It hurts. It's disheartening.
What's your opinion or thoughts on the, I guess, Texas education specifically and their job of educating people on Black history? Because I remember in high school, there wasn't a lot of it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really followed so much what happens in the Texas primary schools, secondary schools. But I do know a couple of years ago, there was tremendous resistance to certain aspects of American history being included in textbooks. So Thomas Jefferson's, I think one of the controversies was whether or not to include information about the founding fathers' religious beliefs, right? Some on the Texas Board of Education believe that shouldn't be included. And so I think when you have essentially politicians deciding, you know, or trying to edit and sanitize aspects of history, you typically get into trouble. I can't answer your question more directly because, again, I haven't really paid really close attention to what's happening on the state level in terms of history education.
Well, Dr. Hill, we appreciate the time this morning for you coming in studio and speaking with us. If you missed this interview at all, you can catch it later on the Raider881.com. Once again, Dr. Hill, thank you for coming in studio with us.
No problem.
We look forward to having contact with you in the future.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
All right. Good morning, Texas Tech. We'll be back after this. We have Baron Batch in studio.
Clouds in the sky, you'll get by. If you smile through your fear and sorrow, smile and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face.
With your KTXT Sports Update, I'm Joshua Cook. Tonight, the Red Raider basketball team is back on the hardwood. Chris Walker and company looking to snap a six-game losing streak tonight as the Red Raiders welcome in the Sooners. Earlier this season, Oklahoma and Tech met in Norman, Sooners winning that one 81-63.
I'm not saying winning or anything like that. We don't even talk about winning. We talk about winning attitude. Let's do things that lead to winning. And then we'll take our chances there, you know, whether it's, you know, picking your teammate up, whether it's touching your teammate if he misses a free throw, or not bugging out during timeouts or diving on loose balls. Just, or, you know, do every single thing that it takes to win a game. And then we'll see what the score is when the game is over, when time expires.
Red Raiders and Sooners are set for a 6 p.m. first tip inside the USA. Mark your calendars. On Tuesday, Texas Tech Athletics announced this year's spring football game has been set. The first chance for fans to see the new-look Red Raiders will be April 20th at 1 p.m. inside Jones AT&T Stadium. Admission is free, and the spring game will be televised on Texas Tech TV on Fox Sports Southwest. Moving on up is exactly where track and field is going. It was announced Tuesday the men's track and field team is in the top five in the nation. On the cusp of a trip to the Big 12 Championships this weekend in Ames, Iowa, the men's team checked in at number four in the country. The number four ranking marks the highest ranking for a men's indoor track and field team in school history. In the association last night, the Spurs beat the Kings 108-102, improving to a league best 43-12 overall this season. The Rockets and Mavs weren't in action last night, but tonight, Thunder at Rockets. First tip is set for 7 p.m., and the Magic bring their talents to Dallas. First tip between the Magic and Mavericks is set for 7:30 p.m. That does it for the KTXT Sports Update. I'm Joshua Cook. Now back to Good Morning Texas Tech.
There's a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air.
I just had a flashback to my childhood, which was awesome. Now I'm going to go home and watch Fresh Prince. Welcome back to Good Morning Texas Tech here on KTXT The Rare 88.1. Josh Cook alongside Kara Powell, Marissa Trivio, Julie Fisher. And across the desk we have
a very... Carlton Banks here.
Impersonating Carlton Banks is Baron Batch, former Texas Tech running back, current Pittsburgh Steelers running back. Baron, thank you so much for coming in studio. I know you're...
I've got a quick question. Can you do the Carlton dance? Can you show us that later?
There's not enough room in here to do it.
Okay, we'll
somebody
do it later.
Okay.
Okay.
But today's show, we are talking about Black History Month. And earlier, actually last night, we had some students put together kind of a montage of some famous quotes and moments from sports in the last 50, 60 years.
After the fanfares of the Olympic opening comes the most amazing performance by America's black streak Jesse Owens in the 100 meters. The world's most superb runner makes the others look as if they're walking as he wins the final and equals the world's record time. This and his later victory in the long jump may well be the athletic performances of the century.
Surratt throws back to Schwedis. Gerhardt throws to Davis, and this is the way you make a touchdown. A new Cotton Bowl record for 87 yards.
After Hodges bounces out, Jackie Robinson slams a triple to left center, and the fans will never forget the sight of Jackie Robinson preparing for the plate on his daring steal.
You saw all the white people, the critics, the world, had me ranked to go down. This was that man, and Allah, God was with me, and this man looked like nothing.
Right.
I want you to remember that. Well, want to know where I get the power? Visit the local Muslim. Read that Muhammad Speaks newspaper.
Right.
Take it from me. I'm going to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. His hands can't hit what his eyes can't see.
He's sitting on 714. Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 715. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
Jordan goes up with a shot and hits it and has 61 points to tie Elgin Baylor's all-time single-game playoff record. To Jordan with 8 on the clock. Jordan ties the game.
Oh, boy.
63 points, and you're looking at an all-time record.
All right, it's win or lose. Game 6 for the Bulls. 10 seconds. And with it, of course, the championship. Jordan, 20-footer, head of the key. Good! Chicago by one, and the Utah Jazz take time. Chicago is world champions once more. The Chicago Bulls have won their 6th NBA championship in the last 8 years.
Back into KT, Good Morning Texas Tech. Derek Ginter across the way helping me out there, getting my mic on. In studio with Baron Batch. Baron, we listened to a few clips there. You had Jordan, you had Hank Aaron, you had Jackie Robinson in there. In sports, you know, I'm a sports journalist, and it's kind of the most interesting thing looking back in history. What are your thoughts when you look back on history and kind of you think of the Jackie Robinsons, you think of the Ernie Davises that played college football, played running back, the position you play. What does it mean to you to play now and know what they went through so many years ago?
Yeah, I think it's important to, you know, I think that's one huge part of Black History Month is, you know, black sports history. And just like Dr. Hill said, just it's American history. And for me, being a professional athlete, those guys paved the way for me. And sometimes you don't necessarily remember that, and it kind of gets lost in the mix of just all the sports. And now it's normal to see black players on the court or on the field or on the track or wherever that may be. But that's not how it used to be. You know, it took certain players to endure through what was a change of just mindsets and process. So, you know, it's something that I'm thankful for.
When you hear those clips and you think about what they went through, I mean, I guess when you were growing up and you were playing sports, did you ever experience any kind of, I guess, issues with being a black athlete? Did you ever experience any trouble from anybody, or was it pretty much they kind of didn't do anything?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. There was this one time they were just like, Baron, you're just so fast that no one can catch you, and that became an issue. I'm just kidding.
Okay. You nearly shocked me.
I was... No, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. No, you know, when I was growing up, it's one of those things that it's a sign of progress. You know, you get to the point Your face.
My face is priceless. Like,
no, it's one of those things that it makes you thankful. You know, when you ask me that question, mm-hmm. and I look back and I think back on it, and that's not something that I necessarily had to deal with. And it's because someone else dealt with it already, you know. And, you know, just because I didn't deal with it doesn't mean that many other people haven't and still don't. You know, I was thankful that I grew up, you know, for the most part in a community that accepted me, and, mm-hmm. and that wasn't necessarily an issue.
We grew up in Midland. Barron is also from Midland, and that's where I grew up. What's the biggest difference between Texas and being in Pittsburgh now?
I'd probably say the people, you know, it's just kind of different culture. Everything moves a little bit faster. You know, I come back here and, everybody will stop and, you know, chat, and it's, I don't want to say everybody's nicer down here, but they're kind of nicer down here. It's just, you know, West Texas is full of great people, you know, and it's dusty and brown and not much to look at. But, you know, the best people in the world live here, and I've traveled a lot, and I'll stand by that.
What's it like when you do come back here and you remember playing college football here, and now you're at the professional level? Does it make you appreciate Lubbock a little more now? Because there are some people that when they come to Lubbock, they're like, oh, it's just the middle of nowhere, all that stuff. But do you appreciate for being your start, where you started playing college football, and now you're in the NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love Lubbock. I love my hometown of Midland. I love just the area in general of West Texas. You know, that's it's where I lived, you know, my whole life before, you know, I left and moved to Pittsburgh. And, you know, I have so many memories here, you know, just driving on campus. And, you know, I was up at the football facility the other day, and just, you know, it's part of me. It's something that, you know, it's instilled values, morals, and things that, you know, I'll take, you know, with me through the rest of my life.
Coach Kingsbury was hired back in December. I understand you got to meet him mm-hmm. yesterday. What was that like, getting to meet the new head coach of Tech football?
It was awesome. You know, Coach Kingsbury and I, it's kind of been, you know, he's known me and I've known him, but we've never actually met. So it was nice to just sit down with him and chat. And, you know, I'm excited about, you know, everything that's coming up and on the horizon for Tech football. And it's just, it's really cool to come back. And I remember when I first got here, it would have been the east side of the stadium wasn't built. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and when Coach Kingsbury was here, you know, there was a lot of work that wasn't even done on the other side of the stadium. So now both sides of the stadium are kind of done. Now they're building the Jumbotron. So it's kind of just cool to be able to see, you know, the work that both of us have put in over the years, just accumulate into the building of, you know, a program.
How excited are you for to see that new video board starting to get worked on that? I mean, as a player, because you've been in NFL stadiums where you've seen the big video boards, you've been in Cowboys Stadium where they have the monster video board. Yeah. Does it affect the players at all during a game with the video board or anything, or do y'all just kind of just focus on the field?
I mean, as a player, you definitely just focus on, you know, what mm-hmm. you're, you know, the task at hand, and that's winning a football game. But at the same time, I mean, it's something to be proud of. It's something that, you know, as a former player, I understand that that's fruit of the work that I put in, you know, the 5 years I was here, and the kids that are here now are going to realize they're going to put in their work, and they're going to come back and see some things that have grown and been built, and they're going to be proud of it.
Well, Barron, we appreciate the time. Appreciate yep. you coming in here and talking with us, and good luck this next NFL season.
Yep, thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll be back with Good Morning Texas Tech right after this.
You could earn a master's degree in 1 year with the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech University. Our 30-hour graduate program prepares you for exciting careers in areas like advertising, electronic media, journalism, media strategies, public relations, and sports media. Courses are available in the afternoons and evening, allowing you to build a schedule that fits your needs. For additional information, including how to apply, visit ttugrad.org.
Good morning, Lubbock. So far, a cool and damp start to our Wednesday morning after rain showers moved through overnight, not leaving behind much accumulation, but enough to cause some wet roads out there this morning, with temperatures in the mid and upper 40s. Highs today will struggle to reach the upper 40s to around 50 degrees with dense cloud cover. More or less, temperatures will stay around where they are. And as a cold front moves in from eastern New Mexico, we could see strong to severe thunderstorms develop west of the city and move into town by this evening, some of which could contain large hail and damaging winds. I'm Cutter Martin with your KTXC weather. Now back to Good Morning Texas Tech.
Good morning, Texas Tech. We're here with Mariah Dessa, Ikere Talley, poet, professor, and author. Truly, I could not be more happy to have you here in the studio with us.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here with you.
Now tell us a little bit about your poetry.
Oh my goodness. Well, I've been writing poetry for a really, really long time. Since I think I understood what poetry was and knew how to write, I've been writing. And when I was about 16, I decided I was going to be a writer, right? And when I decided I was going to be a writer, I decided that I was going to write, in a sense, to make people feel good about who they are, and to make people, to kind of fill in gaps. Let's put it like that, to fill in gaps in stories that are out there. And so I write with that in mind. I write a lot about issues, social issues, a lot about sexism, racism. And right now, actually, I find myself writing a lot about ancestry, survival, and actually issues of mental illness. So I find, you know, my writing is, it's shifting and it's changing, but generally the purpose of it tends to be the same.
Now, I've heard a little bit of your poetry, and it's very personal. Mm-hmm. What's it like to put that out there for the world to see? I almost feel like it's your diary, your journal. Mm-hmm. You're exposed.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I'm going to be talking a little bit about this. I think that at the point where I can actually put something down and create art out of it, I'm working through it, you know, or I've kind of worked through it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I put it out, when I share it, it's mostly so that other people who maybe have been through something similar have a reference or a space where they can go and know, okay, you know, this happens, it has happened, and I could live through this, you know, I could survive this. And I think it's part of what I'm here to do. So most of the time it doesn't feel like anything. I know that sounds strange, but I feel like that's what I'm here to do. When people come and talk to me afterwards, though, that's when it hits me. Like,
what's the reaction most common you get from your poetry?
A lot of people can relate to some of the work, which is sad, actually, in a sense, you know. There are some poems in particular that really hit people. I've had people come up to me sometimes. They're crying, you know, they've heard a poem that touches something that they've experienced. And I, because I'm writing different sorts of things now, I also have people come up to me smiling and laughing. You know, I don't have those poems with me in studio, but I actually have written a poem about having gaps in my teeth. And the response to that poem was that a young man came up to me, he said nothing, and he just smiled, and he had a gap in his teeth. You know, so depending on what the content is, people come up and they have multiple reactions. But a lot of times I get the feeling that I'm saying something that maybe someone has wanted to say but didn't find the words to.
What is some of the specific content and some of the specific situations that you have to address in some of your work?
Good question. I have written about lynching. I've written about rape. I've written about murder of children, you know, specifically black and brown children at the hands of police officers. I've written a lot about love. And I've written about family stories, quite a bit about family stories. I'm writing more about those stories right now, you know, how people manage to survive trauma, things like that.
Some of the people that come up to you and talk to you about how inspired they've been by your work, I know that in history, family culture has been very, very strong for many African Americans. Do you still think that's the case today, or do you think it's they've been affected by some of the society things the internet has done, pulling families apart, et cetera, et cetera?
That's a good question. I think there are a number of things. I mean, we talk about this sometimes in my class, the pull from the collective to the individual, right? So, like, I think that in the past, people pulled together because they had to, and because they knew that there was something common that they had to struggle for, you know? We have to struggle so that we can get better housing, or we have to struggle so that our children can go to school with proper learning materials, right? And that causes people to pull together. And then sometimes once people get the things that they need, right, that's one thing, you know, communities disperse, or because movements get really, really strong. And this is very political what I'm about to say, but I just have to say it. Things happen to co-opt movements. And you notice that families sometimes suffer from that type of co-optation. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
It does make a lot of sense.
Okay.
Do you think many modern day struggles that are very valid kind of get disregarded because of advancements that have been made prior? Do you think that a lot of times things are ignored just because people assume that those problems have already been taken care of?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. People, I mean, think about that. There's so many issues that we could talk about where people go, that's, you know, they're just complaining again or whatever. And you realize that it's a real problem. You know, I mean, they're, oh my gosh, we could get into so many different things. But
name something specific.
I will. I want to be really specific. I was thinking about, you know, the issue of the young woman who was raped in India. And the issue of the young woman who was, she was 16, who was raped in Ohio, right? Like gang raped. And so there's this kind of, well, you know, the football team is important, you know, so we oughtn't discuss this matter. Or, hey, you know, these kids, they didn't really know what they were doing. You know, this type of thing, you know, oh, well, you know, the girl needed an excuse for why she was drugged or, you know, I mean, just really crazy things. You would think that in a humane space, in a humane society, you would never blame a 16-year-old for something like that, right? You know, so you have issues like that. And of course, you have issues of race, you know. And I think, too, you know, issues, things dealing with the environment. You can say, oh, we've got all this technology, we've got all these things, we know better, and you turn around and it's like, but we're losing our humanity, it seems. You know, we're all people and we've all got to share this space.
You've lived literally all over the place, in Europe and in New York and in the South. Is there a place where you feel like race issues will never be at the forefront of somebody's mind? Do you encounter that on a regular basis? Is that
I have never been anywhere like that, you know. When I lived in Namibia, you know, which is in southern Africa, it was so interesting because there we didn't have the issue of race in our faces, but what we had was the issue of tribe, you know, the group that a person is from. And, you know, oh, we're from this group, we're from that group. And still you had the wow, because that's one of the last places to gain independence. You still had these really ugly remnants of racism. So you have this strange mix of things going on. I can't say I've been anywhere where people are just like, we're all the same and it's all good.
Do you feel like it's more hidden in some places than being in your face? Because
definitely.
I would agree with that statement, but...
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind elaborating?
Yeah, I think when you say it's more in your face, definitely. I mean, it, you know, there are people who say all sorts of things to you in a very sophisticated way. Like, you know, you might be talking about writing, for example, and they'll say something really condescending, you know, about, well, you know, that's just, you know, people are just writing about what they feel, but that's not really poetry, you know, that's just, you know, that's not legitimate, you know. And you're going, okay, well, according to who? right?
I thought the point of poetry was to express yourself. Exactly.
That's what you thought, right? But you will have people who will tell you, well, you know, craft, you know, and I know craft is very important, but you'll have people who will come to you, you know, you've been writing 17 years, publishing for, you know, for however long, and they'll, well, but craft. And it's like, you think that I don't know something about craft, you know? So that's kind of a hidden way of getting at somebody, you know? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, oh, so what are you teaching now in your classroom, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The canon in and of itself can be racist.
I would agree. Sorry, Marissa.
So you've traveled a lot, right?
Yes.
How is the racism different from like New York to Texas? I've never been anywhere really outside of Texas, so I don't even feel the racism when it happens here.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. Well, see, I can't speak on Texas because I just got here.
Or in other places in the South, because South and North are different.
Oh, gosh. I hope not.
You said you lived in Alabama, right?
I did, but I went to Tuskegee University, which is a historically Black college. So, you know, when I go out, I tend to pay attention to where I'm going. I will tell you this. This is something that I thought was funny, and it relates to Marissa's question. When I was in Berkeley, California, which is known as like this hippie, you know, open space, right? I was in the parking lot of Whole Foods. That was the first time I heard anybody call somebody the N-word. Was in the parking lot of Whole Foods in Berkeley. And so, I mean, I thought, well, isn't that interesting? You know, here everyone is supposed to be so, like, liberal and loving and hippie and...
Well, was it in a friendly way? Because people say it like,
Oh my gosh, Marissa, no.
No. Yeah, no, this guy was really, really angry. And you know what? Marissa brings up an interesting point because discussions I have with my students about the N-word, as I call it, they are very interesting. I mean, it's a younger generation who uses words in a way that I would not necessarily use the word, right?
Now, what do they say in those discussions?
They say that it is not it's not meant the same way.
Do they feel like they're taking ownership of the word?
Yes.
I don't understand that. If something was meant in a derogatory way, just because you are now saying it, mm-hmm. doesn't mean you've taken the meaning away from it. And I feel like it blurs the lines of, is it appropriate for someone else to say it because you're now saying it?
Right. And we discussed that in the classroom too. But what I end up saying to my students is that I think that someone dropped the ball in between my generation and their generation, right? So if they feel that it's okay to use that word, the chances are that they haven't been steeped really deeply in the history of the word and how injurious it has been to a lot of other people, you know? And so I don't look at them like, oh, you guys are just so, I listen to them and respect their viewpoints, although I don't share it. And I really do feel like somebody dropped the ball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm from New York originally. You're
Yay.
From New York. Yeah, right. I'm a big Spike Lee fan.
Yes.
I like everything he does, but one of my favorites is Do the Right Thing.
Mine too.
And I watch it quite a bit during Black History Month. Mm-hmm. And my question is, do you think it's still relevant today? And was it and is it still a decent representation of modern day urban racism? I know it takes place in Bed-Stuy, mm-hmm. in Brooklyn, and you know, right now you live in Jamaica, Queens, but I just maybe add something on that.
You know, it's so funny. I love that question. I love Do the Right Thing. It's a beautiful movie. And even today, I mean, you know, there are certain things that are based in that time period, you know, like somebody getting sneakers and then one person scuffing them and, oh, you know, well, what are you doing here? You know, some of the things that are addressed in there, like, I mean, gentrification with the guy and the guy's like, hey, listen, you know, like the guy ends up being the mayor. Yeah. He's like, well, he ends up being from there. Right. The guy who like steps on the shoe.
The Celtics jersey.
Yeah. 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 It's like this whole... You know, I mean, that's a big deal, actually, in New York right now. It's a big deal. And I feel like that the Spike Lee must have seen that coming, right? I think it's pretty representative of New York. We've still got all these pockets of people who are separated in a sense, you know. But money and class are probably the hugest issues that we're dealing with in New York now, which of course is tied up with race, right? But I will tell you that when I'm living in New York, what I see more and more is that we are being so divided by who has the ability to afford to enjoy New York and who doesn't. That's really, really what I see. And the less you have, the more cornered you are, you know? And the more cornered you are,
if you were just tuning in, we were with Meridessa Ikere Tally, poet, professor, and author, and we'll be right back after this break.
Let's travel back to the 1950s, arriving at the height of the Civil Rights Movement, where things were separated by black and white. Berry Gordon Jr., born in Detroit, Michigan on November 28, 1929, created what was soon coined Hitsville, USA, commonly known as Motown Records, founded January 12, 1959. Motown Records assembled the soul and pop classics that changed America. By not only creating a black-owned, black-centered business, it also created a common ground that could bring both blacks and whites together. Former boxer and automobile worker Berry Gordon and Smokey Robinson, a songwriter 10 years younger than Gordon, decided to establish Motown Records. Robinson, who was a lead singer of the band called The Miracles, produced, wrote, and sang several of Motown's most memorable hits, including the label's first smash song, Shop Around, in 1960. A year later, Please Mr. Postman by the Marvelettes was the label's first number one song, and it would not be their last. Many hits to follow, such as I Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye, Reach Out, I'll Be There by the Four Tops, Baby Love by the Supremes, Papa Was a Rolling Stone by the Temptations, Superstitious by Stevie Wonder, Brick House by the Commodores, I'll Be There by the Jackson 5, The Tracks of My Tears by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Neither One of Us by Gladys Knight and the Pips. And as the saying goes, the rest was history. Well, it became the best part of history and music. Motown has produced artists from Marvin Gaye, The Four Tops, The Supremes, The Temptations, Stevie Wonder, The Commodores, The Jackson 5, Smokey Robinson, and Gladys Knight and the Pips, to name a few of the many classics. Today, Motown continues to make hits with their new headquarters operating out of New York City with artists and groups like Boyz II Men, Tony, Queen Latifah, Erykah Badu, and Brian McKnight, following in the footsteps to some of the greats that came before them. From KTXT, this is Bianca Yarbrough.
Welcome back, Red Raiders. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech. I'm Julie Fisher, here with Josh Cook, Marissa Trevino, and Kiera Owl breaking it down.
I love this song. It's so good. And that package, Bianca, too legit to quit.
Yes, that was that. One of our students put that Motown package together. It was awesome.
All you listeners out there, I'm going to get a camera in studio here pretty soon because we dance a lot. We laugh a lot. There's a lot that you guys don't see and y'all would not probably think that we're
I think there's a lot they probably don't want to see.
Oh, there goes DG. I think a camera in the control room would serve us better.
I don't know, Josh. Your dance moves are pretty frightening.
It will never happen.
Well, we really want to thank you guys for hanging in with us today and listening to our show. This was in a very special place for most of us in our hearts, putting this show together. I think we all had a moment where we just stopped and really realized how important all of this was, and just there were some pretty poignant moments. Like Dr. Carlos Hill said, I mean, we live this every day. It's not just black history. It is history. It is American history. It is international history, and some of the things even that have been, as I mentioned before, accomplished in the past 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, the fact that Barack Obama got reelected shows that every day we are making progress and we are learning more.
And in 2000, was it Alabama that had the interracial marriage lifted?
That's what Kiera, I think, was going to bring up.
Yep, because I think we still have a long way to go. And that is one of my prime examples of, if you don't know, which I think I've addressed before, my dad is black, my mom's white. I couldn't have lived in Alabama in 2000 because my parents marriage would be illegal. Like, that concept blows my mind, and it makes absolutely no sense.
Well, and they say that that law wasn't enforced, but even the fact that it exists, Kira's looking at me like, girl, even the fact that it existed is horrifying. When she told me that, I trusted the almighty Google to tell me the truth, because I was shocked. I could not believe that. Dr. Bernard Harris graduated from Texas Tech, and he was the first NASA astronaut, the first African-American astronaut to go up into the awesome old space area. It's just, it's stuff like that that is so, I mean, it hits home.
Yeah. I think you really can't understand it until you're walking in somebody else's shoes and you have to live what they're living on a daily basis. But moments where things happen and you're completely caught off guard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know going places with my best friend, Rebecca, she's half black, and we'll go places, and the looks and the reactions that she gets sometimes make me irate, just because it's so far out of the spectrum, so far outside of the spectrum on how you would expect people to act. And I know that we're modern day, and in that last interview we talked about how we've made a lot of progress, but at the end of the day, people are still stupid sometimes.
It's true. A lot of it is based, I feel like, in ignorance. Yes, ignorance, exactly. Just not knowing any better. But then I think there comes a point where you have to take it upon yourself to educate yourself and to have that initiative to not be quite so stupid. And I say that in the most loving of ways, but I had a woman come up to me at work once, not here, when I lived in Midland, and asked me about a seafood restaurant, and I didn't know what she was talking about. And she said, don't all of your people love seafood? You mean you haven't eaten there? Completely serious. She was not joking. She didn't realize that what she had said was so offensive to me. And no, I don't even like seafood. That's what I said. And I was like, you're dumb. Get out of my face.
I mean, there are some people that, like, in the hometown that I grew up in, race was not an issue. I grew up in, like, a little bubble. Our neighborhood was so safe. There was interracial. Race didn't matter to us. And for someone like me, a comment, like, I would completely not even think about it because it was something that wasn't a factor when I was growing up.
Mm-mm. My mom attended Texas Tech, and she was a design student, and so she had to take some art classes. And one of my favorite pictures that she has ever drawn is of her and my dad, and the Confederate flag burning. And I mean, it's so stupid, but I love that picture. And one of our high schools in Midland is the Lee Rebels, and their mascot is Robert E. Lee, and it blows my mind. And the Confederate flag is so normal for them. Why?
It's culture, and I am not defending it. I'm saying it's culture, and that's what this whole month is about, is making us reassess our culture and see if it's something that we need to change or grow in or whatever. But we really want to thank y'all for hanging in there with us today, and we will talk to y'all next Monday. Thanks for joining us.
One hour of news and analysis of the big global stories of the day.
Our top story takes us to Iran.
We go first to the US state of Colorado and the first...
This is NewsHour with Owen Bennett-Jones, and coming up in...
NewsHour's Lise Doucette sent this report from the...
We'll be finding out what this means for people in the Arab world's most populous...
One hour of your day, and one of the most informative. NewsHour, daily from the BBC.
The BBC World Service, weekday mornings from 5 to 9, here on the Raider 88.1.
Tune in for Flashback Fridays here on the Raider 88.1. All the things that I used to say, all the words that got in the way. Handpicked songs from the 90s and early 2000s. Playing our generation's version of the oldies but goodies every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. on the Raider 88.1 KTXT FM Lubbock.
The first annual Texas Tech Abathon is coming up February 22nd and 23rd, hosted by the College of Media and Communication and the Whitaker College of Engineering.
The first annual Texas Tech Appathon will challenge students to create the perfect app for the popular on-campus game, Humans vs. Zombies. Visit ttuappathon.com to register now.
With studios located in the Media and Communication Building on the Texas Tech University campus, this is the Raider 88.1 KTXT FM Lubbock. For questions and comments, email raider881@gmail.com. That is RAIDER881@gmail.com.